Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy March. This is March.
This is indeed March.
Happy the New York Knicks are over 500 in March to our Knicks.
The New York Knicks are going to win everything.
Fourth place, New York Knicks. Last I checked, I don't know if they've done move since whenever the last game was last night. Yeah.
I don't know if everyone saw the footage of people outside the garden over the weekend, but I was expecting the ticker tape to start flowing in the streets.
Honestly, last night on Twitter, Sunday night, when people are listening to this, Sunday night on Twitter, there was a major award show on with the Golden Globes, and award shows, whether or not people actually care about them, always take over Twitter. Like, they're like one of the only good things for like live discussion. There might have been more Knicks tweets about just going 18-17 than there were about the Golden Globe Awards.
This speaks to the conversation we're having like 2 weeks ago, though. Like the Knicks can take over that city more than any other team.
Oh yeah, no, it's I readily admit it. It's fun. I mean, as a Nets fan, I think it will be very fun. But I don't know when those two play again. I kind of hope it's not till after the All-Star break, so KD will come back, hopefully. Although I, you know, wouldn't be shocked if KD didn't come back until like the week before the playoffs at this point. Yeah, March 15th at the Barclays Center, and then April 5th also at the Barclays Center. Those will be fun games. I mean, obviously, I think the Nets should win them, but the Nets are like, you can't deny what they're doing. Like, they're super feisty. They have no real stars. I mean, unless you're really buying into Julius Randle, and he's a deserved like All-Star level player this year, but obviously it's his first year playing that level. It just seems like they've bought in. Now will Tibbs be able to do it for the long term? That's been an issue for him his last since the late days of Chicago. But overall, like, you can't blame any Knicks fans for being excited, even if it is funny how excited they are.
No, this is like the Knicks are the NBA Top Shot of the NBA right now. Like if you bought in at the beginning of this season,
then it's Emmanuel Quickly selling for $35,000.
Yeah, like, you're very excited right now. If you're buying into the Knicks now, like, you're probably going to be very disappointed.
Yes, the Knicks are you know, the people who sold GameStop at like, you know, however many hundred dollars. That wasn't quite the peak, but like, you're still very happy about it. You got out before it got like really ugly. yeah, it's just strange, but you know, it's fun for, I guess, I would imagine, like, there's a strong of the college/NBA fans we have listening, a strong Knicks contingent, although obviously Syracuse draws from a lot of different places, so I'm sure we have our Sixers fans who are having a nice year. I know we have at least two Nets fans in me and Andy.
I'm sure most like Syracuse fans are either non-fans, Bulls fans, or Lakers fans.
Or Carmelo fans.
Or traveling Carmelo fans, as as I feel like happens increasingly for NBA fans in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of like a LeBron thing, I think. But I think that does stick for, like, at least on smaller levels for other individual players. Yeah, no, I don't know. I've had a lot more fun watching the NBA this year than college, admittedly. This has just been a really, just beyond even the Syracuse struggles, it's not like those are like brand new. This college basketball season has kind of had the soul sucked out of it. And that's not to say the NBA has been perfect. Like, the NBA probably deserves more heat for how it's handled this year compared to most other leagues, especially after having such a successful bubble thing. But when the games have gone on, and like, and also the All-Star thing is just ridiculous. I can't believe how short-sighted they're being with that. But beyond that, the actual game on the court, I think, has been really entertaining this year. So hopefully college basketball can like figure that out. We've heard, you know, that discourse isn't brand new, but I think this year has really pumped it up. And a lot of it is stemming from the fact that not only Syracuse, but like your Dukes, your UNCs, your Michigan States, although they're getting hot now, your Louisville's, Kentucky, like obviously UCLA and Indiana, nothing new, still bad. So it's the fact that like all the blue bloods plus like a whole chunk of the tier two schools have just been bad this year doesn't help. But college basketball, I think, is in a not great place right now. And you know, that's been very apparent with how the ACC has looked. I know you want to talk about the ACC beyond just the Syracuse struggles and yeah, I mean, I think the ACC is like, you know, the conference and is expected to be at least like among the best conferences every year. And this year it's really bottomed out. And I don't know if that's a more long-term concern because it was getting kind of rough last year as well. But this year it's like really jarring.
Yeah, no, I think that right now what's happening is kind of the, I give it another year before we, like, I declare this for sure, but I think this is like that middle ground before the reset within the conference. And I don't think that means that like Duke, UNC, and Syracuse are like permanently screwed. But I do think this is like, we've been seeing this boiling for years. And I think like now this kind of like weird season, while I wouldn't take everything from COVID, so like next year again is like the year to figure it out if this is a real trend or not. But like, this does seem like there's a bit of a like level set now of like, all right, like Florida State, Virginia, and like Virginia Tech are like three of the best programs in the conference. They're the only three programs that are ranked right now. I think like the Florida State ascending to the top, like, you know, unmatched really, has been a like probably 5-year process. I think Virginia hanging around still where they are, you know, has been a 5-year process. I think Virginia Tech is the fact that they've been able to withstand losses and attrition and coaching change and all that, I think to me, says a lot about, you know, the great footing that program's on. But like, you know, Dan kind of mentioned like we're right now we're broadcasting before the North Carolina game. So really it doesn't matter what happens in that game. I think we can still have this conversation. I guess Dan, like looking at both the current standings and then like kind of where programs are headed, who would you say are like the top five programs right now? Not necessarily teams, but programs in terms of like their current and long-term viability.
I think it's way too early to sell on Duke long-term. Now, obviously, when Coach Tay retires, and that doesn't even seem all that imminent at this point, but who knows. You know, I think more often than not, they've been very good in this, like, post their last national title, him competing with Calipari for all of the one-and-dones. Like, obviously, they haven't had, like, the super deep tournament runs, but their last championship was built on freshmen. And they've just been such a recruiting force that I think it's silly to think that like one bad year or a couple like years that aren't quite like what they had been doing is going to like totally diminish everything. So I would expect Duke to bounce back. I think UNC is still clearly a top tier program. I think they have the added benefit of like they've been through the coaching changes. They've kind of been through like a really bad coaching tenure. They've bounced back. They're a huge brand. I think they're as big or big. Like, honestly, you could make probably have a really interesting debate over like what a more stable brand is between Duke and UNC. I'm not even sure what I would say, but I think UNC might have like they're both very different in ways. But I think UNC will be fine long term. Also with like Roy's been, you know, a solid recruiter. He's had his ups and downs, but I think they'll be okay long term. And then I think like you hit on Florida State, Virginia are clearly like the two most stable programs of the last couple of years. I think Leonard Hamilton probably needs to win like or at least come close to a national title to really start breaking into like that he might be a Hall of Famer anyway, but like a definitive Hall of Fame case. And he's just done a really impressive job. Obviously, there's like the tournament thing is kind of looming over him a bit, but it's kind of hard to deny how good he's been for almost all of his tenure there. And then Virginia,
yeah, if he can get Final Four. Like if Hamilton can get a Final Four, then obviously we're in a different then his conversation changes very, very much.
Yeah, then you can put him in like the beeline tier of like didn't quite break through, but good every year, built that program up for like the football school. It's actually an interesting comp, like the Hamilton beeline thing. Now that I think about it, that's just like the first name that popped in my head. But there is like something to say, like, imagine if Boeheim had never won 03 and like gone to the Final Four that year. Like, obviously, you know, you can't put him on the top tier with a lot of coaches, but you know, you still say like he won forever and like it changes his legacy a lot, but it's still a legacy. And then Virginia has a title. They're still really good. Even like Virginia just seems like even in their down years, like they're going to be a factor, every single year. Just like when they don't have their best teams, they're still going to be such a like nightmare to play. So I think they're clearly in that top four. And then fifth, I think I'd go Louisville. I think like there's just such a strong backbone of that program. I think Max is a good coach. Even these like kind of iffy years, they're recruiting well. So I think that's my solid top five. And then, you know, the big looming question for this podcast is like, where do you put Syracuse in relation to those, given the recent struggles, the, you know, still the specter of like, well, if they make the tournament, they can do whatever. The Boeheim question, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. Honestly, like, I think for me, my biggest hesitation with Virginia and Florida State is the same one that most would have, is that, especially for Florida State, a program that hasn't been to the Final Four in this regime and hasn't been to a Final Four anytime recently. I think their most recent one was the 70s, like early 70s. It might have been soon, or it might have been earlier if someone wants to. I'm just poking Dan, I guess, while I'm like vamping. Wants to double check me.
1972. On that. Last lead date was 2018, so kind of recent.
Yeah.
A couple that, of the back 2016s.
Because they lost to Michigan that in 2018, if I recall.
That sounds right, but I'll check while you're going.
Yeah, I feel like I remember seeing Mo Wagner lording over the Noles at a bar. But yeah, like really, those are the only things that give me pause. Like obviously, Virginia's gotten over that hump, and has Bennett, and I think Virginia has a good chance to keep Bennett for a long time, unless the NBA comes calling at some point, which it inevitably does for coaches, and then it's their call whether or not they want to stay. Boeheim, obviously. According to multiple accounts, you know, turned down the NBA at kind of the peak of his pre-title powers. Other coaches have given it a go and flamed out, you know, Rick Pitino being one of those. I think for me, I think North Carolina's the one on more solid footing of any program, only because they've been able to do it through multiple coaches. North Carolina's been a power in the sport since basically day one. And has basically cycled through numerous coaches. Won titles, found different ways to do it. And I think being a state school, even though they're a well-regarded state school, I think being a state school allows you a little more wiggle room academically as well. I think that where Duke has faltered, and I'd still put them in number two, I think where Duke has faltered is just around the fact that I think they're getting exposed a little bit, because you and I talked about this like in the week after the you know championship run in 2014 for Duke. I think where Duke falters here is around the fact that as the college game gets less important, and I think we're seeing college tape get less important and those matchups get less important for guys, like especially now that the G League has just a team of like mercenaries basically. Duke trying to position themselves as like the lesser evil to Calipari, like that's going to siphon talent away from them. That doesn't mean that they won't be able to pick up more guys, but like unless Kay potentially swings back around to the way he used to recruit pre like 2013, I think you could see Duke suffer a little bit. I still think though that they're the clear number two behind North Carolina. I think number three is Virginia. Virginia, again, a well-regarded state school. I think Bennett's got them on really solid footing. And just similar to like what Jay Wright is going on at Villanova, like I think the footing that those two coaches have their schools on now is far better than what they inherited. And I think what you'll see them going forward with or without them, I think that they're in good shape. I think Louisville, you know, state school, great resources. Obviously a city that buys into them 100%. Like they're clearly set up as number four. The number five, I'm tempted to say Syracuse, but realistically it probably is. It's probably Florida State. Just because I think that the current state of the program and the trajectory of the program is such that they're on firmer ground than Syracuse. But I think we can get into the rest of the list after this, but I would put Syracuse probably sixth, because of the Mello Center, because of the history, and because, I think the alumni base has enough resources to put into this program that while it might be a rocky next few years after Boeheim, I think that they find their footing eventually. And even if they don't project themselves into that like top two to three in the conference, I think you still see a program on firmer year-to-year footing than most of the ones in the ACC, especially given like what we've the amount of, you know, tumultuous kind of up and down we've seen from most programs since we joined the league.
I think like if you're going to take it on like a positive note with Syracuse is like, while we've been kind of iffy, we've had this like whole bubble dance every year over the last couple, like, we haven't been definitively worse than NC State. Like, Notre Dame's been, like, quietly down, like, from where they were when they really peaked in that year they made the run to the Final Four. I think it was the Final Four. It might have been the Elite Eight against and lost to the Kentucky team that was loaded, that then lost to Wisconsin.
Yeah. After Bonzi Colson, they really, like kind of, like, cratered.
Yeah, and, like, they don't get nearly as much. I've seen some of it this year. I've seen some, like, what's up with Mike Bray this year, but this is the first year, really. State is kind of what State is. Tech is, like, this is, like, the best Tech's been in a while, and they're, like, you know, 13-8. Clemson, same way. Pitt is still a mess. Like, you know, it seemed like Pitt had some momentum going. Like, they were kind of turning the corner, and then they're, you know, two of their three top scorers are transferring out, so that's not great. Miami hit a skid this year, but so, like, Miami deserves probably more credit. 7-15 this year was, like, under really tough circumstances, losing Lyles for the whole season. But overall, like, I think Syracuse is in that next pack. It's just the pack's very big. But I don't think that they're, like, necessarily worse off than any of those schools. It's just, like, we're not as close to it. So, and also we have higher standards, I think, than a lot of those. But, like, that's to say, it isn't crazy to say, like, Syracuse kind of gets, like, one step forward, gets on solid footing, gets itself off of this, like, bubble, like, hell that we were stuck in, and into, like, at least, like, pretty solidly in the tournament most years. I don't even think it has to be every year. I think, like, obviously, I think the expectation for the program is to make the tournament every year, but if you make it 4 out of 5 years pretty consistently, I think you can excuse, like, one weird year where we were, like, on the outside looking in. So it's, like, it's not like we have that far to go. It's just the concern is obviously Boeheim's retirement looms at some point. It has to be coming soon, just kind of by default. There really isn't, like, it's not going to be the thing where, like, Duke will be able to go handpick whoever they want to take over. Now, that person might not be up for the challenge because that shadow's huge and their expectations are even higher than ours. Although I'd say ours are pretty high as a program. But it's still, like, a very open question. And, like, you know, there's been obviously discussion, as always, about Hopkins. Mike Hopkins isn't doing very well in Washington right now. Now, that isn't to say, like, you know, you wouldn't still go talk to him about the job, but, like, is it going to be an easy sell if Hop wants to come back to go hire him off of, like, you know, what could end up being, like, a really tough tenure at Washington? Are you going to hire him off of getting fired?
And then I think it's easier for Syracuse to hire him in that regard. I don't think it's easier to sell him to the program, and because I do think they were ready enough Hops. I mean, yeah, like, I think there were a lot of Hop skeptics, not because of his recruiting acumen. I think that was and remains his strong suit. I feel like there's still a lot of Hop skeptics from the 4-5 stretch while Boeheim was out.
That's what I think is going to be a struggle, because while his recruiting at Washington has been great, and, like, I think one of the dirty secrets about college basketball is, unless you're, like, a great game coach, I would take a good recruiter off of a good game coach. Like, I think that's just almost every time the more important side of things, bringing in talent. Now, if you're a bad game coach and a good recruiter, you are going to need some help. Like, you're probably not going to top out at, like, a national championship. But if you're a good recruiter and a pretty good game coach, I think you can, or a great recruiter and a decent game coach. Now, Hop, that's an open question, because, like, here he wasn't great in the suspension time. Now, I don't know that should, you know, be entirely held against him. It was a weird situation. But now Washington has, you know, brought in some serious talent and hasn't really, you know, done a lot. It has been bad this year. Obviously, I don't think that Boeheim's retiring after this year, so it's kind of a moot point what, like, this year means over everything else. But I think it'd be a weird sell for a lot of people if Hopkins, like, goes 500 the next 2 years and gets fired. Like, I just think it's tough to hire that guy to then run a bigger program than Washington. I do think a lot of people would be for it because he is who he is. But once you go beyond there, it's, like, very not obvious. I know everyone wants to point to Autry or GMAC. I just think, and I've always thought, like, I think Jerry's getting just now starting to get to the point where he's, like, bringing in some big time recruits, but
I think it
took a while. And, like, he's also still young, so I don't want to, like, freak out about it, but, like, he's just getting to the point where Hopkins was in, like, the mid 90s. So it's just, like, I don't want to hand the piece of the program over to someone who just may not be ready or may not be the guy because he's a Syracuse guy. I just don't
know. The common counter to that, though, and I don't agree with it, would be, oh, well, Jim got the keys under those same circumstances.
Yeah, 50 years ago.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, the circumstances then, the circumstances now. I mean, again, we lost our coach to Tulane at the time. Like, that is not
different world.
Yeah, it's a completely different world. It is not a thing that could happen. today. I think that where Syracuse and Duke probably sit in a very similar boat is that I do think both of them, from a donor perspective and from an administrative perspective, would prefer to bring somebody in the family in the door. And I'm not saying that I think Duke has more donors. I think Duke has a larger fan base for sure. But from an alumni standpoint, I think that the donor base and everything else actually looks pretty similar in terms of their preferences and their like how they behave in many ways. I think that similar to Syracuse, who would probably prefer to bring in Hop even after a losing record, don't you think that Duke would probably prefer to bring in Collins or somebody like Collins, like at a like even with a losing record in Northwestern? I do feel like that's something both schools would do.
I think it's an interesting comp because Coach Tay's assistants who have gone on to coach elsewhere haven't exactly like blown the doors off of their schools. I don't even think Collins. I think Waj might be the guy, and he's like been okay at Marquette.
Marquette fans want to run him out of town right now.
Right, and he had two tournament bids in his first 5 years last year. They're probably not going to make it, I don't think. Like, looking at the records this year, they're under 500. So it's not like some obvious thing. And then, Collins had – Capel is, Pitt isn't exactly – again, I thought Pitt looked – in large part because of how they played against us this year. But it did seem like they had things going in a generally decent direction considering how bad the program was when he took it over. And, he still deserves – it's not like he's on the hot seat at all. He still deserves a lot of time given – what he's digging out from the Stallings situation was just couldn't have gone worse. But it's not been a snap your fingers turnaround, which I think part of the reason you bring in Cable is because he's the recruiter. He was the guy who really embraced the one and done thing during his second stint at Duke. And then Collins, I think he's a decent coach, then Northwestern to the tournament. While maybe not the accomplishment that every single Northwestern fan on Twitter wanted to make it out to be a couple years ago, was an accomplishment. They hadn't done it before. But things have kind of drifted back to the center there. I know they were coming off a nice win streak recently, but I just can't imagine if I was a Duke fan, I would probably have the same things to say about all of them. Are these really the guys taking over for Coach Tay? Should we not just flex our muscle and try to go get someone who's a proven winner somewhere or as close as you can get to college basketball? Because it's tough to get a proven winner that is at the same level as you.
And these are guys that they don't have a ton of recent recruiting wins. I think at least Hop has a lot of recruiting wins of late, even for losing Washington teams. Yep. Realistically, he can sell in the idea that I came back to Syracuse and that has to speak volumes when you're a good recruiter. I still do have some doubts about his in-game coaching ability. And we'll actually, later in the podcast, we'll get to this conversation around Coach Q on the women's side. But I do think that he still has more of a pedigree. He has gold medals. He is more of a pedigree than these other guys. And I think that's worth something because of how long he was on the bench with Boeheim, what he's learned, the fact that he was with Team USA, the fact that he's gotten so many guys to the NBA comparatively to these Duke comps. I still think that what he's Washington, I think you can chalk a lot up to injury this year. I just think that he's still a better standing. I do agree with our general premise here, though, that he's going to be it's not going to be an easy sell, and I honestly don't know who else you go get if you leave the program. And I don't think that if Boeheim is involved in the search process, and I think he will be, I don't necessarily know if you're getting anybody outside the family.
Yeah, that's a question. And it's very easy to say that Boeheim should just not be involved. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think Boeheim probably needs to be involved. I think people, and I've been very frustrated as anyone who follows me on Twitter or listens to this every week, I've been very frustrated with how things have gone this year. I think people are very, very quick, or a segment of people are very, very quick to pretend 40 years of Jim Boeheim before this didn't happen. I think he deserves A, to decide when he retires, and B, to at least say his mind, give his opinion on who you're hiring after him, even if it's not I dubbed Mike Hopkins the replacement for me. But I agree. I think he is going to stump for one of his guys, and I don't necessarily think he should get to make the choice. Also, I want to note, just as an aside, because he was such a popular name for a while, Nate Oates at Alabama, who was at Buffalo before.
Not happening.
And, like, it's not happening. There's a really good piece on Alabama basketball, which is very good this year, on The Athletic. I forget who wrote it. Basically, like, outlining how they see just like a – they're basically making basketball a part of, like, the – we're taking the money that we've made, the millions and millions of dollars that we've made from football, and also not paying players beyond allegedly, you know, whatever else happens in the SEC, paying players on the books, to investing in both the school and making Alabama as a school really competitive, but then also, like, kind of holistically growing their athletic department. It seems like they're going to do whatever they can to keep Nate Oates there. And just because he coached at Buffalo for a couple of years doesn't necessarily mean he wants to come back to upstate New York. I don't know how significant his roots up here are, but he seems very happy at Alabama. And so, yeah, I would not put our eggs in that basket. And that's not even like a knock on Syracuse. I think anyone would have trouble getting him out of there. So, yeah, we're going to have to get creative. And I don't know if there's I don't think there was an easy answer. Like, even Hopkins, I don't think is an easy answer. So, it'll be one of the most fascinating coaching searches. Like, I think even football, the last couple of times we've kind of honed in on where things might go. Like, we knew Babers was a very distinct possibility. We knew, obviously, Schaefer, we knew pretty quickly was a possibility. And then Marone was on all of our lists going in after, like, we kind of heard his name bubbling up. So none of those were, like, huge surprises at the time. I think basketball, the direction in which it goes will be a – it'll either be a surprise or it'll be like, oh, well, I don't know about this.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that there's a short list of known commodities on the alumni side, some of which are more established than others. There's a short list of guys that fans would want. I think where for us, for really for Duke too, is the, like, okay, if it's outside the tree, like, shrug face. Like, there's not really, like, there aren't obvious names to point to. Like, maybe it's Becker in Vermont, but, like, he's on everybody's list. Like there's guys, sure, but, like, that's why I think most in the know or casually in the know, like you and I are, would probably trend more towards a related name to the tree, just because if not, you're either completely locked into who's going to be the pick, or it's a guessing game. And realistically, with an AD that went to Syracuse, with a men's basketball coach that went to Syracuse, with several notable, you know, former Syracuse coaches out there, including, you know, the one that most until very recently would have picked out there as options, I'd be very surprised if it was anything but that.
I do think if you're going to look beyond archery, I think if there was another direction in which Boeheim would be open to, I would both look at the trees of Coach K and Rick Pitino as potential places to look. Because if it's not his guy, it's going to be someone who he knows, someone who can vouch for.
Totally. Yeah, I definitely buy that. Although I would say,
like, shout out to future Syracuse coach Rick Pitino.
Christ.
Honestly,
Syracuse coach Rick Pitino, who most fans would.
Oh, God. I thought about that, like, during this conversation. It would be, I don't even know what I would do.
There's a lot of Pitino stands. If he was going to hire Richard Pitino,
that'd be kind of annoying. Richard Pitino is kind of annoying, and he's not a bad coach, but, like, he does the thing. And this is, like, not a fair comparison. He's like the, like, tier below, and then also different sport, like Gus Malzahn, where, like, he's either on the hot seat or he's doing just enough to get off the hot seat for, like, 2 years, and then he bounces back onto the hot seat. Like, it'd be a yo-yo thing. Also, his person, he's all, like, the annoying things about Rick, aside from, like, the scandals, but then, like, personality-wise, I mean, and then, like, not nearly as good at coaching. I think I would almost rather have Rick, just because at least it'd be hilarious.
I agree.
I don't want Rick Pitino, but I could I could learn to appreciate it, despite having, like, serious misgivings about it.
Oof. On that note, Dan, let's do some halftime quick before we get to the end of this kind of program status conversation plus some women's basketball. So what have you been drinking?
I've been still working pretty much exclusively through my North Carolina package, which, you know, maybe I'll send us some good beer based vibes down to the ACC tournament. But some really good stuff from a lot of different places. I had not had any beer before. From Neuse River Brewing, I think it's how you pronounce it. It's N-E-U-S-E. Yeah. The Vaccine Double Dry Hopped IPA, which uses a bunch of different kind of hops. Really drinkable for what is a quite hoppy beer. Really nice, like amber color. Really delicious. Then I had... the next one was really interesting. From Tosita Brewing, the Zero to Kimono Stout, which is, they're basically going for like a chocolate covered strawberry thing, which sounds like kind of like border on stunt beer, but it was like well done enough to actually just be really good. The strawberry flavor is pretty distinct, but not like overwhelming. Really nice chocolate and then some vanilla as well. Really good, an 11.5%, so very boozy, as you would hope with something like that. And then I had, I had like descriptions of these. Sticky Crystals from Sycamore. I've had Sycamore stuff before. I had not had Sticky Crystals, which, as you might guess, is a hazy IPA. Quite unfiltered, like really juicy. Not as like dank as I would expect from the name, but quite good. And then last night I had a rye triple from Haw River Farmhouse, which really nice, like crisp, deep kind of like wheat rye flavor. Very drinkable, even though it's almost 8%. And then right now I'm having a Reptar Juice from 26 Acres Brewing. Probably the most like straight up hop bomb of the ones I've said. Another really hazy IPA, very citrusy. I appreciate any Reptar references as a child of the 90s. quite good. So yeah, I'll highly recommend if you're in the North Carolina area where a friend of sent all of these from.
Nicely done. On my end, I had from Highland Park, I had a Bring the Sun. It was a rustic saison, fruited. That was pretty good. I finished off that, Cool Zone, farmhouse ale. It was like kind of a lighter, like wine cooler style, it's Cool Zone with Petit Sirah and, Zinfandel grapes. Actually grabbed some beers outside at a very outdoor, area down Long Beach. I had mentioned previously, had, from Mumford at Material Element, Pilsner. It was really, really good. Hoppy Pilsner. Had from Bottle Logic down in Orange County, Wisdom Check, West Coast IPA. And then I had another bottle of Celadores Verboten, it was a vermouth inspired wild ale that I mentioned back in January. So I had just kind of trying to clear out the fridge. And then, yeah, I got to at least like be outside for a little bit with the other ones. But got a bunch of modern time stuff picking up this week. So I'll have much more to report on next week, I think.
Nice. I have, I think, just one more North Carolina beer, and then I have a. I dug in the back of my fridge and realized I had a lot of beer from Connecticut from a couple weeks ago, so I need to I need to get through all that before I go out and buy new stuff. So probably a couple weeks worth.
Nice. All right, so Dan, we're kind of like closing out this conversation. I think we both kind of came to a consensus on the top five in that next group. I guess who's in it and where does Syracuse sit in it?
It's, I think we're clearly in the second tier. I just think like there's enough long-term, like just, you know, I don't think the last 5 years like knocks us that far down. So I think we're clearly in it and probably towards the top of it. I think Vatek has kind of worked their way up just because they've been so successful the last couple of years, especially amid some like, you know, tough coaching changes. There are a lot of programs would have really bottomed out. They, you know, had like a year where they were bad. So instead of an impressive like institutional job they've done, which is a good sign for their ability to succeed long term. Now, obviously, when you're a Vatek or like one of these lower tier programs, you know, one bad coach can really kind of derail you. But if they keep on making good hires, like they'll be in good shape. It's a good job. I think NC State is just like who they are every year. Like they're always hovering. Like that, I think we get way more. Like NC State considers itself, I think, a pretty big program, and I think we get way more heat for our constant bubbleness. And while NC State has been like this for like longer and just doesn't, despite being like a big state school in the ACC for a long time in a basketball hungry state.
Also haven't made a Final Four in what, 35 years?
Yeah. Like, come on. I think us two and them, like, I feel like Notre Dame should be, but they've just been like, they've been significantly worse than us recently. Same with Pitt. I think Miami probably gets back. I know this year's been a disaster, but I think Miami's also in this tier just based on Larinaga's been really good there. I think they'll bounce back pretty quickly from this. So I think those four, and I would probably put us at the top. Like, I just haven't seen enough from any of those schools, and there's just not a ton of consistency from any of these schools. So I would say those four, and I would go probably Syracuse. I'd probably go Syracuse, Va Tech, Miami, NC State.
All right. I think for me, if I'm looking at the next five, I think it's Syracuse. I'm going to go Syracuse, Georgia Tech, because I actually think they've been able to bring in a decent amount of talent lately. And I think Pastner, I don't know. I'm questionable as far as how much he can keep this team on solid ground, like for going forward. But I'm going to go Syracuse, Georgia Tech, NC State. Actually, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, Va Tech, NC State. And then I'll close out that group with Notre Dame, begrudgingly. I think Georgia Tech is a more interesting program of late than they've been. I think that they're one that can succeed going forward, and there's plenty of local talent to do that. I do agree with you that NC State should be better than they are, but we can say that for the last 20 years. Obviously, Notre Dame, I think Bray has this program on solid footing. But I think Notre Dame has always been on solid footing. I just think that their inability to get over the hump more than once every 40 years is a weird element, and one that is not really talked about enough. And maybe that's just because, you know, they're a football school, or because like they don't invest a ton of resources in basketball. I'm not sure. But I think that would be like my next five. You could probably quibble with whether Miami belongs in that group or not. I know you included them.
Yeah, I would have had Tech. I gave four. I would have had Tech 10. So they'll back onto the next five. I just have trouble with them. They haven't made a tournament since 2010. I think their upside's there. Like, it's not like Atlanta produces a ton of basketball talent. It's not like UGA is any major shades. Obviously, they had Anthony Edwards last year. I think they're okay this year, but and Tom Crean's trying to build them into something, but it's not like there's like a lot to do off there. So like, I think Tech has a lot of high ceiling and should be able to get there. It just, they haven't had any real success in a long time, which is why they fell. But I do think like, it wouldn't shock me if in 2 years Tech was like eclipsing where NC State's been. So, you know, we'll see. I'm not sold on Pastner either. And yeah, it's just like, I think if Notre Dame had another bounce back year, I think they'd be clearly here. I think they're just trending downward just enough. And then like, you could say the same about Pitt. Like, Pitt had a long history of success in the Big East. They more than us have really struggled to replicate it. Again, another one of those things, and maybe it's just that we're so close to it. I just feel like there's been way less discussion about like, why is Pitt so bad in the ACC than there has been about Syracuse.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is it's Dixon plus it's the departure of Dixon. I think most importantly, beyond that, I think it's just Pitt's overall like lack of identity as an athletic program, and that becomes harder too when you're recruiting against, when the schools you're recruiting against, they're not really like facing much. Ohio State's been able to be really good. The Michigan schools have been very good for a while now. So like, Michigan can jump into that like Rust Belt area that Pitt used to be able to with far more frequency. I think Pitt struggled probably in Philadelphia without like having the numbers to back that up. And I think like Pitt suffered immensely from Villanova's rise. If I had to guess, I feel like Pitt also used to raid the DMV a little bit more, and that's something that Virginia's rise and Virginia Tech's maybe consistency as a second tier program has really harmed them. If I had to guess, West Virginia's also been super solid really for the last decade and a half with few interruptions. And I think that the fact that West Virginia's been able to hold on to the Big 12 maybe sheds more questions on Pitt's status really. I'd put Pitt probably, I put Pitt and Miami as the lead in that bottom five. I put Clemson in the lead in that bottom five. I think Clemson's trying to follow that Alabama model that you alluded to earlier of investing resources from football success into other sports. So I'd probably put Clemson, Miami, Pitt, BC, Wake Forest. I think Wake Forest is just permanently cratered. I don't really understand what's going on there. BC has an opportunity to fix things, but I still don't think fixing things at BC from a basketball standpoint really means much higher than like NC State's current situation?
Yeah, I think so. I would have, I think I would also have Clemson leading off the next group, just based on like, it does seem like they have a decent amount of like institutional will to be at least decent, followed by Notre Dame. And I think you could flip flop those. I either way, like, I think they're both kind of similar. I think Notre Dame has more history of success, but things have just gotten weird there. While Clemson's pretty feisty, then Pitt, and then I think BC and Wake is like, you could go either way, like just tie at 14, because both have just been completely unable to get out of their own way. They have like a moment here and there, but both should be better. Like, Wake's in North Carolina. Boston is still a pretty good city for basketball, and it's not like there's a lot of New England competition beyond UConn. So it's just they're just very disappointing, and I don't know what either of those programs really hopes to do, but they just can't seem to figure anything out with through like however many coaching changes both have had over the last decade or so.
Yeah, so I guess that's all. This sounds decent for Syracuse still. I think the question is just going to be, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, the question is going to be whether Syracuse fans are okay with it. That like is a consistent 4th through 6th-ish finish good enough? I mean, it should be based on what we've witnessed to date in the ACC. But I think a lot of fans who are used to, you know, every few years winning a regular season title in the Big East and every few seasons maybe winning an ACC title, a Big East title, like those, like at the tournament level, like I think those are memories that stick with older fans and donors and, you know, eventually like kind of fade for like younger fans or fans who really have only been ACC fans. Like, to me, I'd say like being firmly like place 6th probably helps.
I kind of wonder, yes, if like 4th through 6th is like kind of the general standard, like if you're the 4th through 6th best team in the ACC, I'd say you're probably making the tournament and you're at least like a reasonable contender to make some noise in the tournament most of the time. The last couple of years have been weird for the conference overall, but I also wonder if like earlier dry spells for Syracuse, like the late 2000s before the like Johnny Flynn era, like kind of resurgence, and then like the 90s after the 96 Final Four, and like obviously those weren't quite as long, but there was also less like obvious stuff to point to. Like, you couldn't make the lazy like, well, we're not in the Big East anymore and that's why we're bad thing, which doesn't really make any sense. Or like, you can't point to it being like Latter-day Boeheim and like, is he just like lost it because he was still like kind of in the prime of his coaching career. So I wonder if it's like, I don't know, if those things are actually factors. I really have just never bought the Big East ACC thing because it doesn't explain why like Louisville's been perfectly fine for most of the stretch, and it doesn't explain like a lot of other stuff. Like, it just, it's not like every other program that stayed in the Big East or whatever's been thriving. It's been like Nova and that's it. It's like Georgetown's been great. Like, they've been worse. Yeah. Just as they beat us occasionally doesn't mean they've been good. UConn's just finding themselves. Like, it's not like all the programs that like stayed behind or like have like kind of gone in other directions have been like, have found much better success except for Villanova. And I don't think that really has to do with being in the Big East. I think Nova just kind of found its peak and Jay Wright capitalized and is really good, and we've known Jay Wright stood for a long time. So yeah, I wonder if just like there have been more things that have like been given stuff or given people things to point to, while it's really just kind of an extended version of what we've had happen before. But also troubling because it is like towards the end of Boeheim's career versus like, you know, when the team's not very good in 98 or whatever. Like, no one thinks Boeheim's retiring a year later. So it's like less of a drastic thing to point to.
Yeah, I think all that checks. Sorry, I know we're wrapping up here. So I will say, Dan, that's a good idea that I might run with for an article at some point in the next week. We'll see kind of what happens, I guess, in North Carolina. Everybody listening should probably know what happens against North Carolina, unless you're watching late on DVR or queue up all your games for like a one-day binge for weird reasons. And if you do, I want to talk to you about a separate article idea.
Yes, no, if you have watched the entire Syracuse season binged over a weekend and you had no idea what had happened before, please let us know. Yeah. That is wild and probably not real. But yes.
Yeah, there's a sports season binger around. I would very much like to talk to you about what you're doing.
Don't even have like the real experience though, because like
the highs and lows are relegated to like a day or two, which is
and also
not
like
real.
You're not on Twitter, like you're not streaming it at Matt Park. Like
this is the problem with binge watching a show. Really, you don't get this experience that like you get if you're doing weekly release model.
I totally agree. I still, this is completely off topic to end up here, but I totally still love the week by week format for most things. I think there are shows that are better binge, and I think there are shows that are definitively better week by week, but I'm glad that we haven't totally abandoned the week by week thing. Some people definitely have. Like I know people who wait for a whole show to come out and then will watch the whole thing.
I mean, shows are like this. I mean, every Netflix show is like this. But like WandaVision's like retaught me like how much fun it is to do the weekly releases.
It's a ton of fun. It's kind of stressful because you have to worry about spoilers, especially for those of us who have to have Twitter open for our jobs. But generally,
I literally have 100 terms muted, and I've been closing my right eye if I use Twitter on desktop. Because it doesn't block trending.
I'm just like, I'm kind of good at like noticing a word and just blocking, like my brain will not read the full tweet. I'm just for whatever reason. But no, it's so much more fun to have like discussions and like be able to like talk about something without just being talking about the end, or then like worrying that like, oh, I didn't watch this Netflix show for the first 3 weeks it was out. Is there now going to be no discourse about it, or I have to wait for it to pop up? So it's, no, I think the weekly model is still for most shows, or at least a good chunk of shows, still the way to go. Obviously, there are some things that are just kind of like, I think like easy watching TV is better binge for me, like stuff that I don't really care to talk about, like just kind of not like trash TV necessarily, but some trash TV, but just like things that like are just kind of really non like, I don't want to say brainless, that feels mean, but just like kind of stuff I can put on and just like melt in the couch and just have wash over me. Like I don't need to talk about that on Twitter, but like a WandaVision or like, you know, some just deeper intellectually stimulating shows, then yeah, I love to have like the full like 6 days of discussion before a new one.
Yeah, there's definitely like, I feel like Netflix's shows do that, like The Crown is intellectual enough, but I don't need a weekly release. Like I don't need a weekly show. Like I don't need, you know, The Crown Revisited.
Yeah. It's nice to have, the balance. Like I do appreciate that we have like both kinds of shows out there right now. I don't know how we got on this.
Is there a binge fan? Is there someone who doesn't watch, who doesn't want the season highs and lows and just wants the entire emotional experience in one like day?
Yeah,
or maybe it's a weekly like, you know, 3 to 5 game binge, which just sounds horrifying.
I bet someone out there does do this. I don't know if they're in the Syracuse fan base, but I would like to hear about their experience if they're just catching up.
Yeah, just like the weird question of, do you only get Syracuse basketball news through this podcast? in which case you're pretty pissed off from
ripped
like
straight
April.
From the full cast.
Definitely ripped straight from the full cast. But like, yeah, or do you, yeah, because in that case though, if it's just Syracuse basketball, are you really pissed off from April through September as well?
Yeah.
Because realistically you don't hear much about the team.
Cause the off season for us is just like, we just do not talk very much basketball during the off season.
There's not much to talk about.
That's true. Basketball offseason is a lot less fun than football, even for like a program like Syracuse football. It's just a lot less fun.
Especially for a program. Because realistically, like what are you going to talk about? Like, oh, Boeheim's back. The assistants are mostly the same. We're still running the zone. Like, there's not much to talk about for this program in the offseason.
That's true. And it's not even like we're not even recruiting at the same level.
Yeah, relatively. Like, there's not a ton.
Pretty fine. It's just like, we're not like, oh, we have like, you know, 2 5-stars and a 4-star coming in like we did for a couple of years.
Good times.
I would like to go back to that if we can.
Yeah, let's must revisit.
Please give us reasons to talk about the program in the offseason, Jim. I challenge you.
So, Dan, anything else before we head out today?
No, shout out to the, I mean, I don't know, who do we honor today? I think Marek, it seems like, is probably going to, this will probably be his last season, although it's not official, but I know the video his parents put out there made it very much seem like everyone assumes this is his last year, so
I don't blame Marek.
No, I mean, he could probably
make a million. He make a million a year in Europe pretty easily.
He has been a really important player for Syracuse. I think it's a kind of a shame that he has basically never been able to play the national position that we probably recruited him for, because of constant injuries and other issues at the center position. I hope that he gets his due in a less stressful time where we can be like, Marek was an awesome Syracuse player, 4-year player. We should all appreciate him.
Agreed. Well, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Trojan Noons is an Absolute podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you might listen to podcasts. And go Orange.
Go Orange.